Blog Talk Radio.
2-1. Below Deck returns for a new season on Bravo next month. That series and spin-off Below Deck Mediterranean are the latest handiwork from our first guest, unscripted executive and executive producer Mark Cronin. And he joins me next. The next and newest event of its kind, Norfolk Television Festival, is 10 days away. Check out the details later this hour from founder Noah Doyle and Emmy-nominated artistic director Jerry Foley. Also ahead, our classic trivia question of the week. And the latest from the TCA Critics Tour, it's CBS's Day Today in L.A. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from near Grand Central Station in New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the hour. Great to have you with us on this midweek afternoon, 82 degrees at the top of the hour here in New Haven, York. And for the first time in a long while, we are coming to you on location. We're a block and a half away from Grand Central Station in Midtown Manhattan, and delighted to have you with us for the program All About Television, second of three shows we're doing this week, week number two of our 10th year on the air. Some wonderful guests coming your way, all from New Haven, York this hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. You have a question or comment for any of our guests, you pick up your voice and ring this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You are catching us across the country or around the globe right here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you're shy about using the phone, no problem with us. We got the chat room going. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and get 944 already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. We will have news notes at the bottom of the hour focused on CBS's announcements earlier this afternoon at the Television Critics Association tour in Los Angeles. But if you have not heard the news, ESPN announced around noontime today that one of the most popular sports center and sports anchors, John Saunders, is dead. He passed away late last night at the age of 61, cause of death unknown. And if you've been watching ESPN throughout the day, there's been a lot of tributes to one of the best announcers and one of the best people in the world of ESPN. For 30 years, he was involved with that network, and 25 of them, he was the host of the weekend morning program, The Sports Reporters, the best roundtable show of its kind, not just in sports television, but anywhere on TV. I was a big fan of it for many, many years. He took over when Dick Schaaf, the creator of that show, passed away. Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, famous author who about the Maury stories, who was a regular on Sports Reporters, had this to say online a few hours ago. The world lost a great gentleman of broadcasting today, my friend John Saunders. He steered our weekly debates with a commanding but gentle touch and was always the best and most decent of us. God must have needed a truly great voice and even greater soul to call home so soon. Sundays will be sorely empty for now. I had the chance to see His and Hers with Michael Smith and Jemele Hill, and both of them did that program, at least the opening of it, with tears running down their eyes. You could not help it. They were devastated by the news because one of the things that John Saunders did that you didn't know about was that he was a champion of diversity, not just at ESPN, but for television overall. When he was not doing SportsCenter or the Sports Reporters, he was also, for a number of years, the voice of hockey. He was the host of their Stanley Cup playoff and finals broadcast before the league went to NBC for its coverage of the of that sport. He also did college basketball, and for many years he was also the Saturday afternoon pre- and post-game host on ABC's coverage of college football. Once again, John Saunders passed away at the age of 61. He leaves behind his wife, Wanda, and two daughters, and he will be profoundly missed. And now joining me here in New York, a top executive and a top executive producer in the world of unscripted television. We've had him on the show before. His latest work is Below Deck, the popular series on Bravo that begins its fourth season on September 6th. The pleasure to welcome here with me face-to-face in New York, Mark Cronin. Mark, thanks for coming aboard again.
Thank you, Simon. Lovely to be here with you.
How's Below Deck doing?
It did very well. We had a spin-off series called Below Deck Mediterranean that aired this summer and did every bit as well as its parent show, Below Deck, parentheses Caribbean version. It did really well, got above 2 million total viewers, and Bravo very happy with it, so we're going to go back and do that again. And premiering here next week is Below Deck, the original series from the British Virgin Islands, and it was a beautiful season, full of drama and excitement, and that premieres, and I hope it does just as well.
Why do you think that show has caught on? Some people would think from afar, oh, that's like Love Boat realized.
Right.
For those who may, of course, remember that classic comedy-dramedy series. But what about the people on that boat? What about the passengers on that boat? What did come in your mind in terms of thinking it would work?
I think what we brought to Bravo was a little bit more gritty reality than you see on some of their other shows. Some of the other shows are a little slicker, they're more beautiful, you know, or carefully shot and crafted and edited. But our show is, it's kind of an intense production process, and the cast really have these 24/7 jobs that are very stressful, service-oriented jobs with very high standards. Layer on top of that this, like, kind of militaristic ranking system that they have from captain to first mate to bosun to junior deckhand. So you have these built-in hierarchies. You have a very dangerous, exciting, action-filled location in a boat with its, you know, on the high seas. And I think that combination of kind of grittiness brought to the docu-soap, workplace docu-soap, has kind of opened up the eyes of some of the audience that it's actually one of the shows on Bravo that does the best with men, because there's plenty there for the standard Bravo audience, but it also brings a bunch of action, quite frankly, and also we do it with kind of a comedic eye as well, and I think those elements are what is making it stand apart from a lot of other shows, and it's making it really resonate with the audience. It's a co-viewing show, and it's doing very well.
Mm-hmm. And what made you say at some point, we got to do a spinoff, and having the Mediterranean be that place?
I always say that. I say that at the minute somebody buys the show, I say, and we're going to do spinoff. But I always knew in pitching the show that it was the kind of show that could be done in every ocean. There's just like the Housewives have New York and LA and Beverly Hills and Orange County, the world is rife with yachting centers. We did the first one, of course, in the Caribbean, but this new idea that the Med is a whole different kind of world. You get more European people on board. You have to deal with a lot, a lot of different issues in Europe than you would in the Caribbean. And I think there may be more in store as well.
Mm-hmm. You've done a lot of different types of unscripted television. One of the first times I had you on, you did Idiot Test. You still do Idiot Test on GSN. Ben Glee was on our show earlier this year. The show continues to score more viewership, get more unique in terms of its shows, and of course, I understand that it will be back on GSN.
It will be back. I can announce that we'll be producing 65 more episodes this fall, and they'll be back on the air early next year. So the show is doing very well. They're actually buying more than they bought last time. GSN, they're very happy. We've had a great time doing it. Ben, of course, I think is pretty much the backbone of why that show works so well. He's just a special talent, and he's been doing an amazing job for us. He's a lot of fun to watch. He's very funny, and the puzzles are fun, and the show's doing great. Yeah.
A lot of people don't see that it really is, isn't a Ben, it's those puzzles and how visually you have to make them.
Yeah.
That makes them such a brainbuster deal. And I asked Ben about this in terms of how long did it take to put these puzzles together, and he acknowledged that it does take quite a bit to really put these puzzles together, especially when you want to make them tougher and tougher and tougher as the game goes along.
Well, every episode, basically, the audience has learned a new set of tricks on these puzzles, and the whole idea of the puzzles is to trick you in a way to make you come to some conclusion that's incorrect, to make you feel like an idiot, obviously. And so to do that, to continually trick you into drawing a false conclusion, we have to continually come up with new angles on how to fool the audience or fool the puzzle solver. And yes, it is a challenge. We have a staff of puzzle generators. The other interesting thing is it's not a normal kind of writing. You can't just hire the standard trivia question writer or even any kind of writer. It has to be somebody who has a very special kind of visual logic talent. And so we have a very stringent audition process for our writing staff. They have to actually generate puzzles. Some of the puzzles are generated by artists who come up with a visual trick, and some of our puzzles are generated by writers who then have to go to an artist. We also have a full staff of graphic artists who work with the writers to generate the puzzles. It's a very unusual structure to how we work that show creatively.
I've noticed that as the seasons go along, there's been more of an effort to try to pair contestants in some unique ways. not just have couples, let's say couples in a particular genre or couples in a particular culture, whether it's dancers or singers or actors or people who know the British ways of life kind of thing. Is that more deliberate as the seasons go on that you're trying to do the pairing of the audience? You know,
it is.
Sessions?
I mean, quite frankly, it is because they are such popular episodes. When the show was originally pitched to GSN and the original structure of the show, it was meant to be a rivalry show, cops versus criminals and all kinds of different rivalries, and we ended up not doing that in the first season. We thought, well, you know, it's enough. Ben's really funny, and the puzzles are the stars as well, and it's enough to see two people who are friends or husband and wife try to work together. But we did a couple rivalry episodes that season, and those really popped for the audience. So we came back again, and we did more, and those popped again. So we are in a situation where the show itself, even without a rivalry, seems to do very well. But it's so fun to have a special episode where we've done, you know, conservatives versus liberals, and then that just gives Ben more material to work with. He's got more to sink his teeth into about what's going on, the second story to the show, not just the competition of the game, but also the rivalry itself. And it gives him more room for comedy, which has been great for us, and those shows are working really well. So I think you'll see more of those as well.
Before we leave the game show world, Mark, what's your thoughts about the success ABC is having with this three-hour block on Sunday nights of Fun and Games, which just got renewed for the second season?
I am so happy that they tried that, and I'm so happy that it succeeded. I think that they did it the right way. They didn't try to alter those shows for the modern lighting taste or anything like that. They went to the original view of what those shows were. Even though they were daytime shows, they brought that same look and that same feel. There's a little tongue-in-cheek in it, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's actually kind of a bonus that it's kind of funny that it's a throwback, but it kind of proves that those formats are so timeless that you just plug great contestants into a great game and you're going to get great entertainment. So I'm glad to see it. As a guy who loves to produce game shows myself, I mean, of course, I'd like them to produce new formats that perhaps I've created, but once something like this happens where these golden age of game shows come back, I think it will increase the appetite for more as well. So it's very good for all of us in the game show world.
Do you think, by the way, Mark, that the ABC is learning you don't have to be dark, you don't have to have music throughout, no matter who's talking, what's going on, to make the game show work in prime time?
Yeah, the moving dum-dum-dum-dum-dum of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you know, obviously took over in network game shows. I think a big thing that happened in network game shows was the concept that you had to have life-changing stakes. That if you're going to bother to do something in prime time on ABC or NBC or CBS, that the prize better be life changing. That's why you have so many $1 million prize kind
like
of shows.
Like Deal No Deal and Millionaire.
Exactly.
100 questions.
And I agree with that. I think life changing stakes are lovely to have. But I think these shows are showing that that's not really the full entertainment value of it. It doesn't have to be all about the pressure of changing your life, and if you don't get this question right, your kids aren't going to college. It's okay that the show itself, the game play-along can be fun, the comedy of the host interacting with the contestants and the celebrity contestants, these things are all also a way to success in a game show.
And if you haven't heard all three of the Sunday Night Game Show at ABC, Celebrity Family Feud with Steve Harvey, $100,000 Pyramid, whose executive producer Vin Rubino was on our show several weeks ago, and Match Game with Alec Baldwin, Aubrey Rubino, and Tell Us to Tell the Truth, the new version with Anthony Anderson. Barry Posnick, who was working on that show, was also with us several months ago. Mark Cronin is a top producer and executive producer of scripted, I should say unscripted shows, game and otherwise. Among his work, Idiot Test, which will be coming back for season 4 next year on GSN, and Below Deck, which will start its new season, number 4, on Bravo, Tuesday, September 6th, day after Labor Day, 9:10 East Pacific Time. Mark joins me here on location on Smart Be Televised. We're coming your way near Grand Central Station in Midtown Manhattan. And you have a question or comment for Mark, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. The TV Critics Tour will be wrapping up by the end of the week, and coming up Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have one of the top TV critics in the country with us, from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Rob Owen. And next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, BET is looking for the next big rapper, and the way they're doing it is a new show called One Shot. It premieres on August 23rd. We've got the executive producers, Mike Smith, with us next Monday. And then we'll introduce you to someone who many people think may be the next Orson Welles of television. His name is Moses Vanur. He is the creator, the producer, the writer, director, and the star of an interesting dramatic series called Money and Violence that was all filmed in Brooklyn and mostly filmed on his dime, two seasons worth. And in a couple weeks, that show will be presented on smart TV sets and smart devices, courtesy of Lionsgate. He's a really incredible talent. Moses Vanur, he is with us next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. As the TV critics people are doing their thing in Los Angeles, Mark, what's the talk these days about where unscripted TV is at and where it's headed?
Well, I think you've seen a trend toward, when reality, you know, broke into the scene kind of in the big prime time scene with the early shows like Survivor and The Bachelor and those things at the end of the last century, the audience was happy with formats and big setups, and the hand of the producer was forgiven. But as everybody's grown up with reality television, I think there's been a move toward authenticity, where a more organic premise is needed, that it's not enough to have the producers put a bunch of people together to live. They want to see people who would be living together whether there was a TV camera there or not. That's how you had the rise of families and things like the Kardashians. But now I think you're starting to see it come full circle, and there's been enough of the organic premise reality that the audience is sophisticated enough that they're starting to accept a format again. That's why you're seeing Naked and Afraid do well. I think Below Deck is a little like that. I think the audience knows that we hire the cast, the crew. I mean, they're really yachties, but I think the audience understands that we've assembled them and put them on the boat under the captain. But they're fine with that. I think everybody's fine with that as long as they are really doing their jobs and really good at their jobs. The audience is sophisticated. They've grown up with reality television for 30 years, so they're ready for, you know, to forgive a little on that side as long as the story you're telling is very, very truthful. I think the quest for authenticity is on. The audience knows every trick in the book that the producers have used over the past 30 years. They can hear the edits in the Frankenbites, and they don't want that. They want to feel like they're watching something real. At the same time, you've had this pressure on budgets that is really mostly in cable, but in broadcast as well. You've had this downward pressure on what shows can cost in order to survive. And so where we used to, I call it the destruction of the middle class, that you're either a $1 million an episode network show or you're a $200,000 an episode cable show, but the days of the $600,000 reality show are rapidly disappearing. So you're seeing, I think the future trend will continue like that, and you better be doing your show inexpensively in the future. I also think, though, that dovetails with the production value issue, because the audience doesn't seem to care that much about high production value anymore. They just want authenticity. So they're going to be forgiving of a shaky camera or a not quite lit well or whatever it is. They're forgiving of that because that's at least telling them or signaling to them that what they're seeing is very real and unproduced by the producers.
Where do you see Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, YouTube, Red, all of these services that people can get now through smart TV sets or smart TV devices, where do you see them in the picture for unscripted television?
I would love them to get more in the picture. I think you're seeing them try some experiments in those spaces, but they're clearly leaning on scripted content for their binge shows that they're producing.
And John Landgraf had a lot to say about that yesterday, the head of FX, at the TV Critics Tour, where he continued to say, while he acknowledged peak TV is not peak yet, he thinks it's now going to continue at least till 2019, he was very critical about Netflix. We know they want to be the biggest original home in the world, but now he's saying it could be a monopoly, and he suggested that the way Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Crackle are picking the shows they want to do, that there's something sort of evil or something sinister in the way they do it.
Well, listen, you know, it's a democracy. The audience has their choice, and if you make shows that the audience doesn't want to watch, they won't watch them. I do think it's a meritocracy. I think that if you make good programming, they will come. I think that Netflix has arguably made very good programming, and they have come to binge quite happily on their shows. But that doesn't mean that many other people aren't talented enough to make that happen. I don't know exactly. I didn't hear what he said, so I'm not sure what the sinister angle he had was on it. But I think that we're all fighting in the same arena, and we all the game is not rigged, and you as a viewer have the freedom of any platform to watch whatever entertainment you would like, and I think it's doing very well. That I think that system works very well. I think that the idea of binge watching reality television hasn't really caught on yet. Although, you know, you could argue that there's been marathons going on forever. I mean, I think even Real World was doing marathons on MTV back in the day. So, yeah, some percentage of the audience loves to just sit down and spend 8 hours with one show. And I think that's fantastic. To me, as a producer, it doesn't matter that much. I don't produce a show differently than I would as a weekly or as something I think is going to be seen in a marathon. It doesn't matter. I need to make structured episodes of a certain length, mostly hour-longs in those cases, and I need each one to kind of arc into the next. You know, I look at a whole series, at least in the docu-soaps, you know, they're not standalone episodes. The series is meant to be a continuing story. And once you have an arc over the course of a season, well, that can lead out week by week, or if you choose, you can arc that out from Saturday morning to Saturday evening. That's up to you. And it doesn't really affect how I approach the show.
Yeah. Instead, I want to welcome guest 969, our chat room. So if you have a question or a comment, get in the room. That's SimonApple04 by name, and is available through blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That number is with anywhere you're catching us right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll have another special Wednesday edition coming your way 2 weeks from today, and on that we will have an exclusive interview with one of the Emmy-nominated cinematographers this year. He's from Gotham, which is produced here in NYC on Fox. We're talking about Crescenzo Natale. We will have him live, Emmy-nominated for his wonderful cinematography on Gotham, going to third season this September on Fox. We'll have him live and exclusive 2 weeks from today, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And also coming up next Friday at a special time, noon Eastern, that's 9 a.m. on the West Coast, we will have the executive producer of Hallmark Channel's new Sunday night drama, Chesapeake Shores, that premieres this Sunday night, John Tinker, will be with us. Also, our annual visit from Terrence Gray, the head of the New York Television Festival. That is next Friday, August 19th, special time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Mark, is there an area of unscripted television like true crime, which seems to be a hot area? We mentioned Netflix Making a Murderer, which is their huge deal, or killing deals on Discovery. It seems to be the hot topic, both scripted and unscripted. Is that an area you want to go, or is there another area that you haven't touched yet that you want to go?
I think it's exciting that a new genre has been discovered after all this time. The Jinx was the one that did it.
HBO, yeah.
Somebody managed to take what could have been a documentary film that would have been normally told over the course of an hour and a half, and they turned it into a cliff-hanging, you know, self-teasing, you know, meted out over several weeks. I guess the entire length of the series was, what, 6 to 8 episodes? I kind of forget. But to be able to make 6 hours of a documentary subject is incredible, and they
look at how they hung it at the end. It really hung the subject.
And they did it with an eye towards a serialized story. So a serialized documentary, it's a brilliant concept. It's a new genre. Do I want to do it? I feel like maybe if I could put my comedic twist on it. I've never done a show that was too serious. Honestly, everything I do has some level of a comedic piece to it. I like my shows to be a little bit more lighthearted. I don't think I would ever do anything too hard-hitting as those kinds of documentaries are. But if I could find the right project where I could do something super gritty and truthful that still had some humorous piece to it, I love it. I think it's a very exciting genre. And it speaks to what I was talking about, is it's the audience's quest for authenticity, that reality needs to be more real these days than it ever has been. And that's why you're seeing the merger of the documentary world with the reality television world.
At some point, do you want to get into scripted? Because sometimes when I interview unscripted people, that's something that's sort of bubbling around.
Yeah, you know, every reality production company that I'm aware of has a scripted division. It's mostly a money-losing prospect if you're a reality television company. I think it's a very special type of production, a very special set of skills are necessary to make good scripted content. My career has been 25 years of unscripted. I can honestly say I don't think I have something new to offer the scripted world. I think I'll stick in my lane. It's been very fun for me. The thing I like about reality television is you kind of do it as you produce it. You're following. You need to react to the real world. You need to adjust in the real world. Scripted is a whole different process. You make your plan, the script, a year ahead of time, and then you for the most part execute that plan that you made a year ago. And I just don't like that type of production. I don't have that kind of attention span, quite frankly. I need to make my shows and get them over with and move on to something else.
And yet, we now have a company like Lionsgate that also is trying to be a huge television programmer at the same time that they are merging with Starz and doing all these different production deals with the likes of a Netflix, a YouTube Red, whoever. They're also trying to get more involved with unscripted television.
Yes. Well, because you can make money. I mean, it's harder to make money these days in scripted than it used to be. In unscripted than it used to be, because the budgets have been driven down. And if you're selling shows to small cable outlets for $200,000 an episode, and you're probably not owning the IP, unless maybe if you're Lionsgate, you have more leverage. But for me, I mean, I used to have more leverage back in the old days, in the early part of the century when I was 51 Minds Entertainment. We did maintain our copyrights, and we owned those shows, The Surreal Life and Flavor of Love and Rock of Love, and we were able to benefit from selling them overseas. But these days, that's not going to happen. If you walk in and pitch a show to any cable outlet, for sure, and even the networks now, you're very unlikely to end up with ownership of the IP. So you're doing it for the production fee, and the production fee is based on the budget, and if the budget's going down, then your fee's going down, so it's hard to make money in reality television these days, especially, but Lionsgate is trying to do it by just brute force, like the size of their effort. They believe they can create the synergies inside the system where they can actually lower the cost because they've got so many productions at once, and there is some truth to that, so I think they may find some success there.
You had the fortune of both being an executive producer on individual shows, but also you've run your own shop that produces shows. Which would you like better, being the head of the shop or having a personal relationship with individual shows as that show's?
I like the creative process. When I graduated from college, I had a chemical engineering degree. And I went into a very non-creative field in chemical engineering, and I hated it. And I left the non-creative field for the ridiculousness of Howard Stern's television show, but my real aim there was to just get to do anything. I would have taken any creative job I could have gotten. I would have been an ad copywriter, just anything to be a creative instead of a corporate person. And I did build a company that ended up being like a $80 million company a year that we sold for $200 million. And to do that, you have to be corporate to some extent. And then once we sold the company, we became part of a giant corporation, Endemol. And quite frankly, I chafed against it. I really felt less creative in those days because I was pretty much running a company. Although you can say that there are creative issues with running a company, running your company creatively, but it's nowhere near what it is when you're producing a television show. So the short answer to your question is I much prefer the creative work of producing. And I'm very hands-on on Below Deck. Somebody of my age and years in the business, a lot of them will delegate a show to their show running staff and kind of show up and sit in the back and then go have dinner. And I don't do that. I'm there and I sweat the details and I'm part of the decision-making process in the story world and in the production world. And it's what I enjoy. And so the short answer to your question is I like that the best.
You're here in New York. What are you doing while you're here?
I'm here saying hi to you, actually. I'm here talking to anybody who'll talk to me about the new Below Deck season coming up, the new Idiot Test season coming up, and anybody who's interested in hearing about my war stories from the bad old days of early reality television.
A lot of stories. Got to have you back.
Yeah, love to come anytime.
You got it. Below Deck, new season number 4, premieres Tuesday night, September 6th, the day after Labor Day on Bravo. Check your local listings where Bravo is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go. It's bravotv.com. It's www.bravotv.com. And Idiot Test, hosted by Ben Glebe, starts its fourth season early next year on GSN. For more details about that series, www.gsn.com. It's gsn.com. Mark Cronin, great to have you again with us. All the very best with those ventures and many, many more from your production company and your direct involvement in Unscripted TV. It's been a pleasure to have you here and live and in person this time.
Thank you, Simon. Absolutely. It's been beautiful.
Let's do it again.
Okay.
You got it. Mark Cronin joining me here near Grand Central Station, New York, this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. More from the program after we pause for a message from the fine folks at Audible.com. Are you interested in how things go for you? Are you interested in how you can know yourself better? Well, here's how. There's a wonderful book out. It's an audio book called Quantum Leap. And you can find out more about this Know Yourself program now when you subscribe to Audible.com. It is the place for spoken audio, digital entertainment, information, and inspiration. It's from Amazon.com, and Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, through Blog Talk Radio. If you sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, it's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service, including the opportunity to try Quantum Leap, the Know Yourself program, or Charlie Rose interviews direct from PBS and Bloomberg Television, or Harry Potter, or all sorts of wonderful, wonderful stuff with great, great talent. Actually, the Audible spot I was talking about, Quantum Leap is a Blog Talk Radio show, we'll get that in a second, but here's what we're talking about. It's Powerhouse, the Untold Story of Hollywood's Creative Artist Agency by James Miller. That's the audiobook we're talking about, I apologize. So if you want to find out more about how TV shows are made, check out Powerhouse, the Untold Story of Hollywood's Creative Artist Agency. James Miller writes and he narrates, and that's the audiobook you can get right now, among others, through Audible.com. Remember, it's a 30-day free trial, one free audiobook, and because it's Amazon.com, it's great customer service. So set up this URL today, audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised, and hear why Audible.com is the best sound investment you can make. When we come back, we'll find about the next and newest television festival, North Fork. It happens 10 days from today. We've got the organizer, Noah Doyle, and we have Emmy-nominated former director of Late Show with David Letterman, Jerry Foyle. He is the artistic director, and he will be with us, both will be with us, after we pause, after the bottom of the hour, for web identification. You are connected to blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month, and growing. It's your home for Quantum Leap. That's the Know Yourself program we were talking about before, and you can catch it every week, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best speech are available 24/7 at youtube.com. Welcome back for the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. We are live and on location from near Grand Central Station, New York, about a block and a half away here in Midtown Manhattan. 82 degrees at the top of the hour. Gorgeous, somewhat more humid day than we've had in the last couple of days. And we have some wonderful people coming your way this next half hour. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We'll have our classic trivia question for you later in the half hour, too. First, we want to get some quick news notes before we bring our guests from the North Fork TV Festival on. CBS's Day is happening as we speak at the annual Television Critics Association Summer Tour in Los Angeles. Rob Owen from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette will be with us to talk festival and what's happening there on Friday's episode. But here's the headlines for CBS. Big Brother has been renewed for two more seasons, taking the show to 2018. And yes, CBS has confirmed that they will do a special season this fall that will be available on smart TV sets, smart devices like Roku and Chromecast and Apple TV, etc., through CBS All Access. Despite lower ratings, Zoo, based on the James Patterson work, will get a third season next summer on the network. And Late Show with Stephen Colbert will be presented live from the S-Dolphin Theater, not far from here in New York, during each night of the presidential debate. So you can make sure that is on your radar if you're a Stephen Colbert fan. And that is our news note for today. The TV festival circuit is growing and growing and growing. At the New York Television Festival coming up this October, of course, here in the Big Apple. We've got Series Fest in Denver, events in Vermont, in Austin, Texas, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Georgia. And coming up 10 days from now, there will be a new player on the scene. It's called the North Fork or North Fork TV Festival. One of them has to do with The Sight of the Rifleman. Remember that popular TV show? It's still on Saturday morning. The reruns of Chuck Connors AMC. Well, we'll find out about that and more. It's a one-day deal. It's on August 20th, and it'll be taking place in wonderful Long Island. And we've got the two people involved in the festival with us. Joining us live here in New York, the creator and originator of the festival, Noah Doyle. Hi, Noah.
Thank you, Simon, for your time today. How are you?
It's a pleasure to have you aboard. And also joining us is the artistic director of this opening festival. You may know him better as the Emmy-nominated director of Late Show with David Letterman, multiple Emmy Award nominee, Jerry Foley. Hi, Jerry. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Simon. Great to be here.
No, we'll start with you. Why did you decide it's time for another spot on the festival circuit?
Well, I don't see us as doing something that's another spot. I see us as doing something that's focused solely on producers who want to go out there, raise money, and make a television pilot. And there are a lot of great film festivals to sell movies, but there really isn't a marketplace for someone to go out, raise money, make a television pilot, and try to sell it to a network. And so I think this isn't another festival, but I think this is a new genre of festivals that we're doing, and I'm excited for the partnership we've started with Series Fest.
And Jerry, what perked up your interest in doing this over a year after you and David Letterman parted CBS?
Well, I'm really drawn to the curation of all of this content. There's so many smart, ambitious, talented people out there who are taking their shot, telling their story, trying to get that story in front of industry people and in front of the public. And this is a wonderful opportunity to do it right here in the New York area. And it's a pretty pleasant environment to do it in. So I'm a champion of the content creators and the opportunities that they need to get their work seen.
And if you have a question for either Noah or Jerry, give us the ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anywhere you catch us across the country or around the world right here on Blog Talk Radio. We got the chat room going, so you can use that at SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And Rick Webb, our very good friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. Noah, how is this festival going to work?
Well, it's a one-day event. We are doing four separate events at the theater. Two of the events will be screening blocks. I had the honor of attending Series Fest in Denver, Colorado this past spring, and saw many of the pilots that were shown there. And what Jerry and I did was we selected as our first pilot block two pilots that were created or abroad. And so we're bringing in creators from Ireland, Canada, to share their pilots, which I just think are wonderful content. And then the second pilot block we're going to do are going to be local homegrown creators in New York City. Then we have the honor of doing a TV actors panel, and then we'll end the day with a special screening of the JFK docuseries, followed by a Q&A. Of JFK Jr.'s former chief of staff. So it's a one-day affair, but it really is to give everyone a taste, in the community a taste of what's to come in 2017 when we really hope to expand this with many more creators, many more local creators, and really bringing the buying television community to a destination in the North Fork of Long Island that I think everyone likes to spend time in August in.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, one of those pilots that is going to be presented on August 20th is the Rickworld Chronicles. It was a big winner at the New York Television Festival last year. It won at Series Fest earlier this spring. We had the people from Rickworld on our show when we had the Series Fest winners, and I might add that there is talk that that may become a television series very, very soon. Jerry,
Look, as you got into this project,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm shocked that Riftwood Chronicles hasn't been purchased yet and made into a series. And if there's anything our festival does that brings it attention, that greenlights it from a pilot episode to series, I will consider this one-day affair an absolute success.
That is terrific, and I hope so, too. I've seen that program, and it is a really, really good and very unique show that can go in all sorts of directions. And I'm surprised that Sci-Fi or USA or some other networks in the U.S. have not picked it up, or Space, which is the equivalent of Sci-Fi on Canadian television, has not picked it up. Well, I understand there is a couple of Canadian companies or television networks that are interested. Jerry, how are you putting your artistic stamp on this festival? What kind of things do you want this to accomplish?
Well, one thing that has been drilled into me after years and years and years on CBS is that if you invite 10 people or 400 people or 4 million people into a room, you better be entertaining, you better be efficient, you better execute properly. So more than anything else, I want people who give us their time to have a very, very pleasant experience and be exposed to something that they normally wouldn't get on their own. So first and foremost, from the ground up, we want people who take the time to come out to North Fork and Greenport to be entertained and to walk away with something they didn't have before they came in the room.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, how excited is the production community in New York about supporting this?
That's something that we were very pleasantly surprised at. There's a great camaraderie among people who are trying to create content and trying to make their way in this business. And the minute we put out the feelers and the announcement that this event was happening, we were met with very enthusiastic support from all sorts of ends of the business, and that's creators, that's buyers, that's local merchants in the town of Greenport. So the production community in New York is excited about it. Anytime that the television community expands in any way, it's a cause for celebration for all of us, and I think this has been well received.
Mm-hmm. Noah, where is Greenport, and why was it selected as your home?
Well, we wanted to pick a place that we think is a place that people want to discover. And so there's a lot of famous areas of Long Island that I think are known globally, from the Hamptons to Montauk. But there are also places in Long Island that are absolutely beautiful and have lots to explore and do. And I think the North Fork of Long Island, from the vineyards to the harbors, is just is a wonderful place to want to come in the summer. And Greenport Village is a little town that I guess was a whaling town in the 1840s. That has a main street that reminds me of something out of Park City in Utah, and I think could really be a great festival destination globally that's focused on TV in the years to come. And I think the town has been incredibly supportive to us. And, you know, the Hamptons have a film festival, and Greenport will have a television festival.
Mm-hmm. And while we are on the subject of the home, how about getting on the subject of the name? Why North Fork?
Well, it says the definition or the destination, and you know, it is the North Fork of Long Island, and so I think the communities that are supporting us are not just Greenport, but they're Southold and they're Orient Point, and we're really trying to represent the larger community outside of the town. So that's where we came up with the name.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the North Fork. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jerry.
I said, have you ever heard of another town called North Fork, aside from the Rifleman's Ranch?
No, never have.
So there you
but
are.
But I'm so into that series that that's like it's stuck in my mind. It's like, that's the North Fork.
Lucas McCain, huh? That's your guy?
Mm-hmm. That's my man, Chuck Connors, one amazing actor. That was a great – that show was tremendous, and I think as good as any Western out there. Everything from the writing, the directing. A lot of people don't know that Sam Peckinpah himself created that show. It was actually an episode of Dick Powell's Zane Grey Theater, and then the following year it became a series in 1957. It was one of the first series to have an original music score by a brilliant man named Herschel Burke Gilbert. The photography was marvelous. The writing was excellent. Some wonderful writers came from that show. And, of course, the camaraderie, the wonderful relationship between Chuck Connors and Johnny Crawford, who played his son, is a wonderful ongoing relationship. And it kept on going until Chuck Connors' death. But it really showed. You can't fake that kind of relationship on camera. And it really went beyond just the television series.
Well, I would agree with you. I remember it myself, and you can never go wrong with a relationship between father and son. I think it resonates every time.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the producers who come to your festival might try doing a father. We could use some more TV series about father-son, father-mother-daughter, father-son-daughter, you know, family relationships. Always a good subject matter for new television series. We've got the people behind the North Fork Television Festival, which is coming to Long Island 10 days from now, that's August 20th, we've got the organizer, Noah Doyle, and the artistic director, formerly of Late Show with David Letterman. I can't believe it's been now over a year since that show last left on CBS. The wonderful Emmy nominee and Directors Guild of America nominee as well, multiple times, Jerry Foley. They're both with us live here in the Big Apple, and they'd love to hear from you. So give us a ring or use our chat room. The phone number, 646-652-2906. And the chat room is simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's the chat room. That's my email. Oh, wait, let's rewind the tongue here. It's simonapple04. You will find that on our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/tell. I apologize, folks. Live radio sometimes provokes live craziness in the host, and this was one of those moments. So apologize for that, and we move on from there. Again, SimonApple04, you'll find that on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. There we go. And our good friend Rick Webb is already in the room. Remember, coming up Friday on Tomorrow We Televised, we'll find out more about what's been going on in Los Angeles on the other coast at the TV Critics Summer Tour, when we have Rob Owen, the wonderful critic from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, with us. And then next Monday, we've got Mike Smith, the executive producer of the new BET series OneNote, their search for America's next important rapper. Plus, you'll meet an incredible filmmaker and now TV show maker named Moses Manure from Brooklyn, who put together on his own dime two seasons of a fascinating new drama called Money and Violence that Lionsgate will release before the end of the month on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Mike Smith from BET's One Shot and Moses Manure from Money and Violence, they're both with us Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jerry, what do you think people who want to be in the business, who want to break in, what do you hope they will learn out of being at this festival?
Well, you'd hope they learn that there's a chance. Everybody's got a shot. And the beautiful thing about what technology has wrought is that you no longer have to have some huge infrastructure behind you. You just need a good film school attitude, and you need to find yourself in a community of like-minded people. And you can make stories now. You can tell stories now with high production value at low cost, and then you just have to get that in front of people who will appreciate it. So the message I'd like to give to anybody who's choosing to get into this business is now more than ever, you should be embracing it. And don't be discouraged by not knowing enough important people or having an agent or any of that stuff. Go tell your story. Go make your show and stick with it. And there'll be places like Greenport who will help you get it seen and in front of the right people.
Mm-hmm. Noah, do you hope that people who have the dollars that could be put into work, putting shows like the ones that these will be showcased at your festival on the air, and particularly since we now have things like equity crowdfunding and crowdfunding, where we're now starting to see producers actually try to make shows with the money they get from crowdfunding as opposed to just making pilots?
I really hope that producers and also the tech community, whether it's in Silicon Valley or Silicon Alley, who are trying to create the next startup Netflix, will come to a festival like ours, see Riffwood Chronicles, and then say, wow, for a little bit amount of money, I can make a phenomenal episodic series that already has a good cast, has a great script, has a great arc, and it will be their launching pad for a new over-the-top network. And so I really hope so. In addition to current television executives, we really are hoping that people who want to get into the OTT space and tech companies will start looking at us as places to find content.
Mm-hmm. Series Fest, the festival in Denver that has really grown by leaps and bounds in its second year, is now involved with the New York crowdfunding rally with an organization called Seed and Spark based here in Brooklyn. They just made a deal with Rose McGowan, the former co-star of Charmed. She just formed a production company. She's trying to encourage women and women of color to produce pilots that might be used as possible series. Are there any plans to do something in the area of trying to expand diversity on television or to try to encourage more investment in the medium?
Well, absolutely. Obviously, a lot of our plans are in very early stages right now. But, you know, our partnership with Series Fest is one that Jerry and I are incredibly excited about, and we think that the taste their panel has, the jury that they put together, and the content that they've curated, is that we can just piggyback off and really try to get out into the New York media market and the world with the work we're doing. And so, and that itself will lead to a lot of exciting things.
Yeah. Jerry, I wonder if you see a pilot that you like, do you want to become a mentor, let's say, to any of these pilot makers?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not so sure they need mentors as much as they need champions. They're pretty skilled, the people who have created these pilots. But if I can be a cheerleader, if I can be somebody shining a light down the road for them, if I can just be an encouraging voice, then that's something that I'm really looking forward to. These are smart people, and they carry with them a very deep passion for telling their story. And I know what that's like. I know what it feels like. And if I can do anything to keep them up on their feet and keep them focused on the future, then I'm happy to do it. It's going to be a great opportunity for me as well.
What do you see as the difference? Because you brought it up. What do you see as the difference between just being a mentor? And by the way, I'm not talking just being a mentor. Mentoring is something special. But difference between a mentor and, in your view, a champion. What defines a champion?
Well, I think there are people at all levels of storytelling that are afraid, they're insecure, they're not sure that their involvement with a particular piece is as exciting to other people as it is to them. And if you can be an independent voice separate from their production organization and look at their work and judge it on its merits, then that's enough. And to convince people to go forward and to keep the faith and to stay on the course and to convince them that their work is good and that they're not wasting their time. At all levels of production, at any age, at any experience level, people have tremendous doubt. Doubt is in the DNA of any one of these productions, and if I can do anything to erase people's doubts and ease their fears and convince them that they have something good, then that's being a champion. A mentor, that seems a little more formal than I'm comfortable with. But I like to be a cheerleader, and if I can make a phone call or connect people, then that's great too.
Noah, before we go, was there any attempt to try to get an HBO or a Lionsgate or an NBC Universal, some major programmer or some major television network organization to come in as a sponsor or to come in with, let's say, if we see something we like here, we'll do a development deal. We'll do something.
There's absolutely these ideas in the works. As you can tell, we've really are putting this together in a short amount of time, and we're looking for 2017 to be a blowout. But in order to really have those fruitful negotiations, we need to show the television world that Jerry, myself, and the larger team have selected really good pilots and are working with a content provider like SiriusXM, where it's worth their staff time and it's worth their resources to come to our festival and to see it. And I think that's the program that we put together this year. And I think when we have more of those discussions, they will see that we have serious taste, and they're going to be excited to hear more and learn more about it.
And Jerry, before we leave you, given that it's been a year since the wrap of Late Show with David Letterman, did you ever think that this was the role you would take on a year after two decades of working with an incredible talent like David Letterman?
Hey, Jerry, if you want to throw that question to me,
I couldn't have anticipated that I would be the artistic director of an inaugural TV festival on Long Island, but it does play in nicely with what my goals were at the conclusion of the Letterman run, which is I wanted to get in a room with smart people, and I wanted to be involved with new experiences, and I wanted to be involved with new content and new ideas. So this is perfect for me. This is exactly where I would want to find myself a year removed from Letterman, and I'm grateful for the opportunity.
The first ever Norfolk TV Festival debuts in Greenport. That's New York, and that's in Long Island. And it happens 10 days from today. That's Saturday, August 20th. If you want to know more details about all the aspects of the festival, from where you can find it to the panels, and, of course, those pilots being screened, here's where you go online, www.northfork.tv. That's www.northfork.tv. And if you want to, if you're in the New York area, you want to get tickets for the festival on August 20th, you can call this number, 914-482-8774. That's 914-482-8774. Or you can call the Greenport Theaters or visit the Greenport Theaters box office and check out on Twitter at Northfork TV, at Northfork TV. And, of course, we wish everybody involved with the festival the very, very best, not just for its opening year, but for many, many more years to come. Noah Doyle, the organizer, Jerry Foley, Emmy-nominated director of Great Show, David Letterman, now the artistic director of this festival. Thank you very much for being with us. All the very best on your opening festival 10 days from now, and hopefully in the years to come, it goes in incredible directions like the other festivals on the TV circuit have done and then some. And it's been a pleasure to have both of you on.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Simon. We'll
You're welcome, here. Noah. You're welcome, Jerry. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Noah Doyle and Jerry Foley joining us live here in New York on Tomorrow We Televise. And now it's time, before we leave you, for our classic trivia question of the week. If you know the answer, you can win the wonderful book, Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause. It's the book covering the classic ABC drama series from Mark Frost and David Lynch in the 1990s, coming back next year on Showtime, where it will have Mark Frost and Lynch doing all the episodes in writing and Lynch doing all the direction. Very simple question this week. What year did Dragnet with Jack Webb begin on television? Remember, Dragnet was a radio show before it became a television show. What year did Dragnet begin on television, specifically NBC? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you enclose your name and your full mailing address. You can also use Twitter to get the answer in between now and our next episode Friday afternoon. The Twitter hashtag is TWBT. That's Twitter, hashtag TWBT. The Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite all of you to create your own social soundtrack. Learn how from Monty Monaco and the fine folks there at www.hopscotch.com. That's www.hopscotch.com, and they will tell you how. And if you just missed the question, don't worry. I will post it tomorrow morning on my own Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag, at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. We really do appreciate getting involved, but remember, you got to be in it to win it. So simonapple04@yahoo.com, that's how you get involved, or Twitter, hashtag TWBT. Again, I want to thank everybody who joined us today, Mark Cronin in our first half hour, and Noah Doyle and Jerry Foley in our second half hour, representing the Norfolk Television Festival. Again, that festival happening 10 days from now, Saturday, August 20th at Long Island. And again, for more details, it's www.northfork.tv. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll wrap up the Television Critics Tour in Los Angeles. Joining us live, one of the best TV critics in the country, from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Rob Owen. And then next Monday, my guest will be from the new BET series One Shot, executive producer Mike Smith, and from the new drama that Lionsgate will distribute on smart TV sets and smart devices a week or two from now, from Money and Violence, produced here in Brooklyn, New York, Moses Verneau. He's the creator, writer, producer, director, and star. Remember, if you want to catch up an episode to miss or it came in late on today's episode, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast. It's available on iTunes.com, also on the iTunes podcast app on Apple TV. You can download your smartphone or tablet and take us on the go. We really appreciate what you have to say, so communicate. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. Each way you communicate, we appreciate it because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of Blog Talk Radio, Mr. Alan Levy. Remote facilities for today's episode was provided by Jones Works. Remote arrangements made by Brittany Concannon. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum near Grand Central Station in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your midweek. We're back Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.